The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 9th of November. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed, and it's good to have you on board. We want you involved as well. Your WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, your WhatsApp voice notes to that number as well. You can give us a call on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Okay, it's a busy morning for newspapers, so let's see what's making some of the headlines and some of the stories inside those papers. Let's start with the Dairy People Donegal News. Guardian Letterkenny have stepped up a major initiative to combat the rise in fraud activity, which has seen students targeted by criminals to act as money mules. Instances of fraud have surged since the COVID-19 pandemic, with students among those being exploited by criminals to launder the proceeds of crime. Nationally, nearly €17.5 million was transferred illegally through so-called money mule accounts between January and June of this year. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning. The plan to have the Milford Garda District brought under the control of the Basin Letterkenny has been put on ice for the time being. That's according to the paper's sources. It was initially expected that the amalgamation would have been completed before last summer. That schedule was then pushed out until September, but it's now emerged that it will not happen in 2023. The latest news is that Milford will remain a standalone district until the middle of 2024 at the earliest, at which stage the dust will have settled on the fallout from the local and European elections, and politicians out on the campaign will have dodged the awkward questions about downgrading the Milford Garda station. The Milford district reaches from Fannet Head to Burton Port and back in to Duchery, Glenties and Mina Roy across some of Ireland's most rugged mountains, hundreds of miles of open coastline, ideally suited for importing cocaine and heroin. So the suggestion there, very firm suggestion, is that decision is being pushed back purposely until after the European and local elections. The Derry news this morning. People in Derry relied on over 3,500 emergency food parcels in the last 6 months, new data shows. Derry City and Strabane received 3,397 food parcels from Trussell Trust between April and September this year. A total of 1,357 went to children, 2,040 to adults. In the same period, the year before, 3,628 food parcels were delivered, with 1,595 going to children and 2,033 going to adults there. On to the Nationals now, and this is the Irish Independent, and there's been a massive jump in the number of you out there taking out loans to buy cars. Close to 16,000 loans to purchase vehicles were taken out in the April to June period. This is a jump of 36% when compared with the same three-month period last year, according to the Banking and Payments Federation. It is the highest level of borrowing to buy vehicles since banks started recording the data in 2020. However, the actual level of debt to buy cars is much higher, as the bank's data excludes finance deals provided by car sales firms, hire, purchase and leasing details. The surge in bank lending to buy expensive new cars shows that some people have managed to escape the effects of the cost of living crisis, which has seen energy prices, food costs and mortgage rates jumps. And what that says to me, and it's something that's mentioned on this programme from time to time, is that there is kind of like a two-track situation in this country. There are clearly lots of people that are doing really, really quite well and have the resources, but unfortunately there's an awful lot of people who don't have enough money to heat their homes and feed themselves. There's a lot of inequity, inequality, or whatever the correct word is, in this country at the moment. The Irish Times, Molly Martins and her father, Thomas Martins, have been sentenced to serve between 7 months and 2.5 years in prison over the killing of Limerick businessman Jason Corbett in August 2015. The two were led away in handcuffs from a court in Lexington, North Carolina, yesterday afternoon following an 8-day sentencing hearing. Judge David Hall imposed a sentence of a minimum of 51 months and a maximum of 74 months in prison. However, they will receive credit for the 44 months they spent in jail after a trial in 2015. 2017 for second-degree murder before those sentences were quashed by an appeal court. The Irish, sorry, it's actually the Daily Mail this morning, tells us that Irish women among the biggest binge drinkers, I beg your pardon. Wine o'clock culture is being blamed for it. Irish women are among the biggest binge drinkers in the world thanks to a growing culture of wine o'clock. More than 20% of Irish women admitted having six or more drinks in one sitting at some point over the last month. This is almost twice the average rate of 12%. Among the 33 countries surveyed, and places them fifth highest. An even greater proportion of Irishmen, 29%, have drunk heavily in the last month, putting them 12th on the list. The Organisation of Economic Cooperation and Development Health at a Glance 2023 report warns that alcohol increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, liver, psoriasis and certain cancers. So in women, the percentage who reported having six or more drinks in one sitting in the last month, Denmark's the highest at 26%, the UK 25.5%, Luxembourg 23.5%, Germany 22.2%, and then Ireland at 20.3%. But in comparison, say the likes of France, it's down as low as 12.2%. In Sweden, in fact, 11.2%. So the percentage of men reported having six or more drinks in one sitting in the last month. Top of the list there, Romania, well over half of the men there. Denmark, 48.6%. Luxembourg, 46%. We're well down, 30.4%. It's still quite a high figure, but there are many ahead of us. Lithuanian men, 28.3% of them had six or more drinks in one sitting over the last month. On to the Farmers Journal this morning. And a six-month delay in Ireland's derogation cut is possible, MEP Colin Markey has said. The MEP met European Commissioner for Environment on Monday, where the Commissioner insisted that no change would be made to the 220-kilogram limit, but he was very open to flexibility in how it would be imposed, Markey said. The news comes as the IFA has questioned the legal basis of the Department of Agriculture's nitrates derogation mid-term review. The review led to the cut in the nitrates derogation limit for large parts of Ireland, and we covered that map here on this programme a number of weeks back. On to the Star this morning, the department responsible for RTE was flooded with angry letters from the public demanding the station's management be sacked, asking why Ryan Tuberty had been scapegoated and with promises to boycott the TV licence. Some people are suggesting that the reason they didn't pay the TV licence was not because they're upset with how RTE is being run, or sorry, not upset with the RTE payment scandal, but because they got rid of Ryan Tuberty. Letters sent to Minister for Tourism, Culture and the Arts, Catherine Martin, reveal the depth of feeling about RTE's spending controversy, with one saying they were delighted the cesspit in Montrose had been exposed. Others were highly critical of Ryan Tuberty, saying his name was tarnished and that he was never worth the salary he was paid in the first place. An angry email said it didn't really matter to the people whether his salary was fully declared or not. It was the amount of the salary in times when listeners can't pay bills, can't eat properly and can't pay their mortgages. We've been tracking this story, so just to give you an update, it happened in the Dáil last night and it's in the Sun this morning, amongst other papers. The selling of vapes to under 18s will be made illegal before Christmas. Legislation aiming to bring in an outright ban on the sale of vapes to children took another step in the Dáil last night. Shops caught selling vapes to children will be hit with a fine of up to €4,000 or 6 months in prison. It's effectively, there's not a great deal of money in this shop, so I'd imagine it'll effectively wipe out the sale of vapes to young people. The new legislation will also ban adverts for vapes within 200 metres of a school and on public transport. So it's past the Dáil, it goes to the Shannon and then on to the President. And the Health Minister is optimistic that it'll all be done and dusted prior to Christmas. So it'll be interesting to see what impact that has on vaping figures in young people next year. And I'm not too sure about this. I think this is really quite dangerous, but I thought I'd read it out anyway. It's in the Irish Daily Mirror. The bottom line is I don't think there's any safe level to drink. If you've drank, you shouldn't be driving, should you? But a smartphone app will be able to tell if you're too drunk to drive by listening to your voice. Sensors in the smart devices could help determine a person's level of alcohol intoxication based on changes in their voice, say scientists. Participants in a study were each given a weight-based amount of alcohol and randomly assigned a series of tongue twisters, one before drinking and another one every hour for up to 7 hours. They were asked to read the tongue twister aloud, and a smartphone was placed on a table to record their voices. It went through its process that it did and was able to determine whether or not they were drunk. Researchers at Stanford Medicine in the US and the University of Toronto in Canada conducted the study involving 18 adults aged 21 or over. Professor Brian Sofoletto said, "The accuracy of our model genuinely took me by surprise, but I think that is pretty dangerous because... you could have people relying on an app to determine whether or not they should drive when I think we all know that regardless of your voice, there are times you shouldn't be drinking and driving at all, should you? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 0749 125,000. Right, we're going to get a full recap of how the meeting went yesterday between senior representatives from Sialta and Donegal GPs concerned at services at Letterkenny University Hospital. That's on the way. Well, on the 6th of October, 78 GPs from right across Donegal put pen to paper to demand action as it relates to the services at Letterkenny University Hospital. We are a group of general practitioners working in County Donegal. We're coming to you, your officials and others, copied into this letter with grave concerns about the emergency department at Letterkenny University Hospital. We're seeking an external review and action plan urgently regarding access to the department and acute services. So fast forward a month and a significant meeting took place yesterday. We're going to learn what went on now with a general practitioner, Dr. Padraig McGuinness. Good morning to you and thanks so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. So who attended the meeting yesterday, Padraig?
So there was a group of GPs from across the county, about eight of us, and then there was senior management from Sialta, including Tony Canavan, Pat Nash, who's head of clinical services for them, and some of their community managers were there as well as Sean Murphy from LUH.
So as well as the concerns GPs had expressed and then further concerns from consultants who also warned of a potential service collapse, in a conversation I've had too, in fact, with Tony Canavan, he pretty much accepted every point that was made, right? So that's great. We're all in agreement. So now we need to find out how things are improved. And there are a couple of measures that are already in place, but the consultants say that doesn't really go to deal with the core issues that we're talking about. So what was discussed at the meeting yesterday?
Well, I suppose we're GPs, right? We're not politicians, we're advocates. So we don't really want to have to do this. We're doing it because we're really concerned about patient safety, and we're concerned that our patients aren't getting the same level of care that they're getting in other hospitals across the country. And that's what we articulated to them yesterday. So we started off by spending 40 minutes at the meeting, giving them evidence-based stories, giving them stories of patients in A&E that are our patients who waited for long periods of time, who had worse outcomes that they shouldn't have had because of what happened to them in A&E, or what happened to them waiting for cancer services or waiting for appointments or waiting for chemotherapy, or all the things that we know are an issue in LUH. And we didn't let them actually come back to us for about 40 minutes until we fully outlined their case. And, you know, you had Tony Canavan on yourself, Greg, and frankly, there was quite a lot of waffle, really, and quite a lot of non-committals and stuff. So we wanted to ensure that for our 40 minutes, we made sure that they understood the issues and concerns that we had. We then spent some time discussing some of our asks, and those asks remain the same. One is that we need our medical assessment unit up and running and protected with GP access. The second thing we need is we need urgent access to outpatient appointments, including for suspected cancers, in a timely fashion. And the third thing we're still asking for is for an external review of the hospital. And actually, from the meeting yesterday, Greg, you know, it was frank and honest and open, and it was fraught at times, if I'm honest, because there was at times denial of some of the issues that were there, which was really disheartening, because there were times when we were raising concerns and local management were telling us it's the first time they've heard them, which is really worrying because we've told them loads of times before.
Can you give us an example of that?
Every single day, Greg.
Can you give us an example of that whereby something that generally would seem to be common knowledge but came as a surprise to local management?
Some of it was around the urgent access to outpatient appointments for cancer patients. Mm. So we heard yesterday, actually, that, you know, patients who we didn't even realize should be going to Galway now for cancer patients, for cancer investigations, should be going to Galway. Like, ridiculous stuff where, you know, where they're telling us that, oh, there's no issue in that department or there's no issue in this department. And I don't want to get into specifics because to do that, you know,
identify individuals
who work
well.
In those departments. But, you know, hearing from them that, you know, there's no issue in that department, yet we know from our own patients who can't get in, who have suspected cancers, who, you know, we end up trying to send to neighbouring hospitals to get seen. And then when we tried to bring that up yesterday, there was concerns, you know, that that was the first time they'd ever heard this, even though that we have said it to them in writing previously, including with specific examples. And that we have, you know, you've had them on your show, Greg, and, you know, we know that they've been raised locally by consultants as well. So I suppose what we said to them yesterday is the first place we have to get to is not a place of denial. We have to get to a place of these are all the issues that we have, and there is a myriad of them. And where do we go from here? So I think we were clear on that with them. And, you know, it was clear to us yesterday that there's a shift this time. There's something different, actually. And the something different is that this is the first time, really, that we have got all the GPs together, that we have all the consultants together, by and large, or lots of them, that we have the patients behind us, and that we've gone to... The reason we went to the top is because there's actually pressure coming down the tracks now. HICWA arrived in the hospital during the week as well to do an unannounced inspection of ED, which we welcome, because it's clear, and we put this yesterday to Tony Canavan, why has there been no response to the HICWA inspection of the ED before, including the serious letter of concern that he received from HICWA, and why has that not been actioned on? And there was no answer for that.
So where... In going forward, it's the responsibility here, if you know what I mean. Like, are you sitting on the same side as the table as local hospital management? Not necessarily literally, but because there is some confusion often sometimes amongst people like myself and the general public. You know, I mean, who's sitting around this table where? Like, were you taken by surprise at all by the local management? Did it encourage your faith in them? Did it weaken it? Just to answer that question so we're all clear on that, please, Porg.
I hope we're all on the one side of the table, Greg, if I'm honest. So we should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all in this for the same reason, and we're all in it for patient safety, and we're all in it for better outcomes. So I hope we're all on the same side of the table. I think everyone has different pressures, and everyone is trying to manage budgets, and everyone is trying to manage staff and manage resources as best they can. Letterkenny has been left behind for years and years, and the figures show that, you know, and it goes back to actually pre-HSE times where Letterkenny was defunded for years and years and years. And during, you know, and Sean Murphy alluded to this yesterday, that during the post-recovery years when actually we should have been building up our hospital, we were just standing still because we were recovering from the floods. So I'm not going to say, Greg, that we're not on the same side as anybody. We're all supposed to be on the same side, yep. And we're all trying to advocate for patients as best we can. And my hope is that yesterday we articulated concerns that were taken on board and were minuted in an official meeting with the Celtic Group, and we're hoping they're going to act on them.
Since I last spoke to you, people now don't have access any longer to endocrinology services in Letterkenny University Hospital. Dermatology services as well. You talked about the early diagnosis of cancer. They're being sent to Sligo. The consultant in Sligo says, I can't do this work anymore. And people are now being referred from Sligo to Roscommon and Sligo to Galway. So in terms of some of the stuff we've talked about in the past, now this is not the ED, but it's all part of the one facility. It's actually worsened since GP sent this letter in to at least two very, very important areas. Like, I know people through the programme and personally that are literally crapping themselves, if you pardon the expression, because they don't know where to go now. They were midway through some care and they just don't know what to do now. And I'll tell you what they're actually doing now, considering whether or not they're going to put their hand in their pocket and pay privately to keep in contact with that same consultant. That's a terrible situation people are finding themselves in, Porg.
Absolutely. One of the really worrying things that came out of the meeting yesterday was some of the comments from Tony Canavan about sustainable services for Letterkenny. And, you know, and I know he'd said previously in the press things like it's a lifestyle choice to live in Donegal. It is not a lifestyle choice to live in Donegal. We live here because we work here, because our families are here, because our farms are here, because our businesses are here, because we grew up here. That's why we live in Donegal. And we deserve the same care and attention and services that anywhere else in the country deserves. You're quite right. Dermatology is absolutely on fire and we cannot get patients into dermatology. And most of my patients are paying €200 and €300 and €400 privately to go and see dermatologists. And that's to go and travel to see them as well as to pay privately for them. Mm. It's, you know, you've mentioned endocrinology is a big problem. Neurology is a big problem because the two consultants are completely overwhelmed covering huge distances and areas. I'll give you one statistic that'll tell you everything you need to know. There's one dermatologist for Sligo, Letterkenny, half of North Mayo, and half of North Roscommon, one dermatologist in Letterkenny, or in Sligo, and he works out of Sligo. There are six dermatologists in Galway, together with a number of trainee dermatologists in Galway. So that will tell you what Sailta thinks about Letterkenny. It tells you that, yeah, okay, they have three appointments, three funded posts. You can't just announce funding for a post and then do nothing about it. You have to go and actively go and find a dermatologist somewhere.
Can I just remind listeners of what that dermatologist you talked of said when Dr. Padmore retired? The hospital manager in Letterkenny did not think it worthwhile to let me know about that retirement. I found out indirectly. I've had no contact despite new patient referrals being redirected to me. Delivering a dermatology service to the Northwest is Sialta's responsibility, not mine. Adding, delayed diagnosis impacting melanoma survival, acne, teenagers scarred, eczema, psoriasis patients, lives destroyed because of an inability to gain access to care rests on management's shoulders. He can't even get an examination light to continue his work. He's been looking at it for 2 years. He's got 4,000 patients in total. Only urgent cases are being seen coming off that list. And they're expecting him to absorb Letterkenny University Hospital's work when he simply can't do so. And I know that's a more broader point, but I just want to remind listeners of what that one person you referred to said. And he effectively said, and you can read between the lines, it's going to be a case that all dermatology services are going to be out of Galway University Hospital very quickly. I'm not sure if he's suggesting that he can't continue with the workload he has or what's being said. Now, funding is a big issue. The levelling up situation, Porrig. Tony Canavan, in my conversation with him, wanted to look at statistics slightly different to the way you might or politicians might, in that he says the funding for Letterkenny University Hospital, and he argued the point, it's equal to that of Sligo University Hospital. But obviously that doesn't factor in the patient and the hospital workload. But it concerned me a little bit, and no disrespect to Mr. Canavan, he was good enough to make himself available. But I'm not saying he was playing with the figures, but it's if the top people are looking at figures like that and say, well, Letterkenny and Sligo, they're equally funded. It worries me.
It worries us, Greg, too. And yesterday, Dr. Charlie McManus, GP in Litter, really put it hard to Tony Canavan repeatedly during the meeting yesterday to answer that question. And he didn't answer it and he wouldn't answer it. And we repeatedly said to him, you know, our hospital's on fire and you're telling us funding is not an issue. Now, he said on a number of occasions, you know, It cracks me up when I hear politicians or people who work in the HSE, particularly at management level, who comment on things as if they're not responsible for them. And Tony was doing that to you, Greg, and he did that to us yesterday, particularly in terms of funding. And when you look at it, and when you look at Sligo, you know, and the amount of patients they see versus the amount of patients we see, that is not to say that Sligo should be defunded. It's to say that we should have a levelling up of funding to be similar. And when you have, Tony Canavan and others coming out on national and media with yourself saying it is different in Donegal, we are a model 3.5 hospital, you are seeing patients that you probably shouldn't be seeing that should be seen elsewhere, but geography doesn't allow it. You are very far from your model 4 hospital. You are different, but that is not being backed up by funding. And, you know, he kept talking about manipulation of figures, but he was unable to manipulate the figures in any way that showed that we actually are getting equal funding ourselves than any of the rest of them. And when you look at any measure of funding for Letterkenny Hospital, it has been down, down, down in comparison to where it is across the Sailta group. And there's loads of examples of that. And Paul O'Connor, a consultant that needs this in the hospital, gave an excellent presentation on this previously. And, you know, he was given a great example, Greg, which I'm going to give to listeners because they'll understand. His example was of the very famous Father Ted quote, where these things are small, And these things are far away. Just because we're far away from Dublin and we're far away from Galway does not mean we're small. We're actually a really busy hospital, you know, the fourth or fifth busiest hospital in the country, but 14th in terms of funding. It is completely ridiculous. And to read, you know, when we were pushed yesterday on that, you know, we couldn't get an answer from Tony Canavan on that. We asked him to go back and look at the levelling up figures, which we'll come back to him again. But, you know, to read the statement yesterday from Charlie McConlogue and from the minister was just sickening. You know, they make out that they're doing everything and that, you know, there's so much extra funding is coming into the hospital. So it's not. I mean, the reality is it's not. And I'll tell you how it's not. Because your patients who are my patients, your listeners, who are sitting in A&E today, who've been sitting there for 24 hours in a hard chair, they're the ones that know that funding isn't there.
Yeah, and we also know where an extra 30-odd million go. It's to stand still. I mean, we're not stupid. And the days of maybe when people would swallow that stuff are long gone now. And just in areas too, like the philosophy seems to be that we need to provide services in Galway because that's the safe place to do them. You keep hearing this as if it's actually really to protect us. And I think the example was given on urology and it was said here, and thankfully I had the information. Yeah, but, you know, people get referred to Galway because that's where they can get the best service. But it's an 8-10 day wait for referrals to Galway. So that system's not really, really working. So if it is about getting the best of care in Galway, you would, if you didn't challenge it, you would think that it's almost instant and everything's great and okay, well, maybe that's the way it's going to be. Was there anything from this meeting that there's any pathway, Porrig, that you can see now to things improving? Because some of it seems like banging the head off a brick wall stuff. So I wonder from some of the assessment of the answers you got, I can't see how we get through that and on to whereby we start seeing meaningful change. Let's not forget, Michael Sugrue said that this was a dire situation. There needed to be a plan put in place within 8 weeks to offset the risk of a service collapse. So this is really time sensitive. We're not looking at 24, 25, 26 here, Porrig. So did you get anything from the meeting that gave you any encouragement?
Yes and no. I guess the first thing to say is that we wouldn't let them away with anything. Okay, so this was a really frank meeting and we, you know, we weren't plumoshed and we weren't accepting things. We weren't accepting incomplete answers. The first thing is we did get a commitment eventually that the medical assessment unit in some guise will be open for the end of December. When we pushed that to be brought forward, we were met with all sorts of nonsense, but, you know, they have told us that by the end of
December.
Before
you move forward, could you explain to the listeners what a medical assessment service is, where it'd be located, what it's used for, just so everyone fully understands everything, Porrig?
Yeah, sure. Well, I can tell you what it should be. Okay. The devil will be in the detail of what it looks like when it is open. I mean, I've heard this morning that they're planning to staff it from current medical staff, which is not the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be a standalone department, because otherwise it just gets subsumed into the rest of things. A medical assessment unit is supposed to sit alongside ED, but is not ED. And the idea is that if I have a patient today, for example, who I think has a clot in their leg, who is fit and well, and does not need to be admitted to hospital, does not need to be taken up nursing care, does not need to be sitting on a hard trolley or a hard chair, that those patients can go by appointment in the next 72 hours to a medical assessment unit, have one or two investigations done, be seen by a doctor who can read those investigations, give us an answer and send them home. Mm-hmm. So that patient doesn't require admission, doesn't take up a bed. Okay.
Right, okay.
At the minute, some of those patients are taking up beds for 7 days is what our ED consultant colleagues are telling us. So that's the first thing. It's not a panacea, and that was said yesterday by Sean Murphy and others, and it's not a panacea, but it is a cog in the wheel that mm-hmm. we need. So that's the medical assessment unit. In terms of other things, we did get a commitment from Pat Nash that he is going to look at in the next 4 weeks. He's going to look at pathways for urgent outpatient appointments for patients with suspected cancers and other serious conditions. So cardiology is a big one of those. At the minute, if you come in with chest pain, but you're not having a heart attack, if I put you in an urgent waiting list, it's 4 years to be seen by cardiology. It's 4 years for an outpatient echo. You can't wait that long. So the alternative is I have to send you to the emergency department to get seen. And then you sit on a trolley for 7 days waiting for an outpatient echo. If you've got new irregular heartbeat, I have no option because you'll never get an echo otherwise, which is a jelly scan of your heart. You'll never get that unless you're admitted. And so we got commitments yesterday from Pat Nash that he would look at that in the next 4 weeks. He is a cardiologist himself, so he is a clinician. He understands these things. And he said that in 4 weeks, he's going to come back to us with a plan and we're going to hold him to that. Mm-hmm. So we're meeting them again in the first week in December. And the plan is that they will have some pathways in place that will allow for some of those emergency appointments or urgent appointments to be seen.
Right. Someone messaged in yesterday, and I get it, Porg, that we're huffing and puffing, and come back to us in 3 months and nothing will have changed. That's not a criticism of GPs or consultants. There is a limit to what can be done here. But we do have a head of steam up at the moment, I think, Porg. You said that we're at a tipping point here now, that if it comes to it, we'll go out into the streets. What's the measures? What's the key performance indicators here? How do we see that we're making progress versus that we actually need to maybe ramp things up a little bit?
Yeah, fair enough. And I mean, that is the carrot and the stick, isn't it? So, you know, where does the end game be for this? For us, the first thing we need to do is let this review team that has come down from the department do a bit of their work. Okay, so the minister's obviously got the message. He's got the message from us that we're not happy and that the services are unsafe. So he's got the message, and he sent somebody down for the next 6 weeks. But we do have to give that team a chance to do their work. And we hope that when they're here, and we're asking them here publicly to make contact with the GPs who raised the issues and concerns in the first place, and we're huge stakeholders, we see the vast majority of patients in the county compared to the hospital. So we hope that they come and ask us for our input on it. And we'll be asking Tony Canavan to ask them as well. And then we're going to let them come back to us in a month's time from CELTA as well and see if they'll make any movement in those things. Greg, if we're looking at the new year and we're looking at an ED department which is overflowing, if we're looking at patients continuing to wait for 24 hours to be seen, if we're looking at no movement on cancer care services and access to urgent appointments in a timely manner, so if we're looking at all those things in January and we're no further on, Greg, that is the point where we will be ramping up. That's the point where we'll be saying to people, you need to be getting angry. And actually, Greg, you should be getting angry already. Mm-hmm. So patients who are ringing into your show, patients whose mother spent 24 hours on a hard chair last night, you need to get angry.
Yeah. Right? And some of them are, Porrick, but you know yourself, because you deal with them, people too. Some of them are just broken and the fight's gone out of them. You know what I mean? The fight's gone out of people because they're so demoralized by the situation. But you're right. Now is the time to light a fire again, if that's what you want. I'm not whipping anything up. But, you know, you're right. You have to say, hold on a second. People power is amazing, you know. And with the backing of the GPs and the consultants, you know, there's a real window of opportunity here, I think. Anyway, Porrick.
There absolutely is. And, I give it an example of that. Since we've been highlighting this stuff in October, actually, the throughput through ED has been less in October. There's been less patients waiting on trolleys and systems have got better. Behind the scenes, quietly, things have been happening. Similarly, when I was on with you the last time, I was talking about an ambulance turnaround time somewhere close to an hour and a half. It's now less than an hour. So people, and that has come from the department through the ambulance service through ED. So I think, that had come off the back of us putting pressure on. So pressure works, but pressure works when it comes from lots of different angles. So they're concerned because, they're concerned that if GPs are saying it, consultants are saying it, and if patients are saying it, but they have to hear the patient voice. And yesterday when we spoke for 40 minutes and gave them about 10 examples of patients, and we met the Sinn Féin spokesperson 2 weeks ago, hearing those heart-wrenching stories from patients, hearing that, this one guy holding up his, he described it like Gaza, and he said that he was holding up his jacket so that his wife could be examined in a corridor by a doctor. This is mental stuff in Donegal in 2023. But actually, the people who need to hear that are Charlie McConnell. Look, the people who need to hear that is the Minister for Health. The people who need to hear that is Tony Canavan. Mm. And they need to be hearing it from everywhere, that it's no longer good enough. And they need to hear it, either pick up the phone, ring their offices, write them a note. I mean, we have, two government TDs in this county, and they need to be bringing those things back to their government colleagues and saying to them, this is not good enough in Donegal. And once again, we're being left behind. And if they're not getting that message clear every single day, they're not going to act on it. And, we do appreciate that the minister has said that he sent the task force down, but he's not here, Greg. And he
I want to ask you about that. Is the minister not meeting with you now at almost like a distraction at this point, in that, it would be a photo op and, head to one side nodding with concern, and that's, I don't mean that disparagingly, but in reality, is the work underway now, or is it still really important that the minister does come down and hear what's going on and see what's going on?
there's a reason, Greg, that we rejected the meeting in Dublin, and that is for that very reason. Okay. But if the minister is down here in Letterkenny and listening to the consultants and listening to the GPs and listening to the patients, then surely he would bring that message back. So surely he would be able to bring that message back to the department. Yes, of course, there will be politics. And, you know, I have no time for people who play politics with healthcare. Okay. And we have seen a lot of that over the past month. So we have no time for that. We have time for patients and for patient safety, and that's our only job. Mm. And so the minister has told us he's coming down, so we're going to hold him to that, and we're going to hold our local government minister to account for that, because he told us that they're coming down. So when he comes down, there will be a photo op and all of those things that politicians love to do, but there'll also be the frank conversations. And, you know, anybody who would listen to the presentation that Michael Sugrue and Paul O'Connor gave the Sinn Féin health spokesperson, you know, it would really scare you when you lift the bonnet. But we have to do that. And yeah, you have to lift the bonnet and see the issues and concerns that the consultants within the hospital have, that the GPs outside the hospital have. And it's only by getting the minister sitting in a chair in Letterkenny and hearing that firsthand, that's the only thing that's going to get him to bring those concerns back to the department and back to the HSE. And it's interesting just that, you know, we spent 4 or 5 days of Oireachtas committees, you know, talking about RTE and talking about RTE and talking about RTE. No one was dying in RTE. Our patients are dying unnecessarily because they're not getting the care and attention they need. And we've had half an hour in Oireachtas Health Committee talking about it. Okay. So I'm calling on all the politicians in the county, and I hope they're listening today, from councillors to TDs to senators, to be bringing this back to the Oireachtas and saying, hold on, my job is to represent the people of this county. And my job is to say that enough is enough. And if people are saying to me, if GPs and consultants are saying that this is not good enough, then get your bum down here, listen to them in person, and come back with solutions and answers and facilitate SAILTA. You know, if SAILTA are saying they don't have the funding for it, why isn't there funding? Why couldn't we get an answer? Why did Charlie McManus not get an answer from SAILTA from that yesterday? Surely Bernard Gloucester and the minister can get that answer from Tony Canavan, the person who is CEO, who holds the purse strings for, you know, he acts as if he doesn't, but he holds the purse strings for the SAILTA group. And if he can't answer that question, then somebody higher up needs to answer the question of why Sligo University Hospital is getting 170% the amount of funding that Letterkenny has. And if we don't stop that flow down the hill now, we're going to become a community hospital that has no services in it.
Yeah, and the people affected by this is Kathleen. I'm due an appointment with Dr. Padmore, got no notice. If I have to attend Sligo, I'll have to stop going because I'm 71 years old and I can't walk far and can't afford to pay at least €100. I don't drive and I live alone. You know, I mean, that's the worry. You know, and I hope I'm not contributing to it, Kathleen's worry, but we have to talk about these things because we have to make sure that Kathleen's not in that position.
One of the things, Greg, I've had two patients who had to go to Galway for cancer treatment recently. Mm. Both of them don't drive. Both of them in their 70s. Both of them got taxis. Taxis. From Fannad to Galway and back. I'll tell you how much that costs, €400. So they, because no fault of their own, because they live in Fannad, because that's where they've lived for their whole lives, and they had to go to Galway for treatment and they had to get a taxi because there's no services provided. And when I rang SAILTA and asked them, okay, if you're going to have this appointment in Galway, how are you getting them there? There was no answer. So, you know, there's simple things like that. If you're going to send everybody to Galway for appointments, if that's the centre of excellence, how are you getting them there? And do you just expect them, you know, if you're from Loughrea, you can drive in or get a bus in or get public transport. But if you have, you know, if you're from the back of Fannad and you have to go for a dermatology, a 5-minute appointment, and you have to go to Galway for it, you know, or urology, or, you know.
See, what worries me, Pádraig, and I won't take much more of your time, but what worries me is it is the €400 those people are out, but it's the people that go, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going on that road. I'll just take my chances. And those, we don't know. We don't know how many of those are, what are their outcomes, what their end of life is like if they don't get treatment that is like, you know, and there are people listening to this that have says, I'm not doing it. I can't face, either I can't afford the taxi or I can't face trying to make my way up and down from Galway. It's absolutely heartbreaking, Pádraig.
I mean, it is. And every GP in this county has those stories. So while we might not have a figure on the amounts, we all certainly have them, and we all have those heartbreaking stories. And, you know, lots of GPs in the county spend lots of their time trying to work out ways around it together with their public health nurses, and, you know, applying for exceptional need payments for people and doing lots of things in the background to try and get patients to appointments when actually we should just be seeing them in our surgeries, but we can't because we're, you know, we are, but we're spending time that we should be spending looking after patients, just going to get the admin done of getting patients to appointments. And that would be a simple win. You know, the CELTA should be providing transport to Galway for patients for appointments, if that's where they're going to be sending them, or to Roscommon or to wherever that might be. But look, don't be disheartened either, Craig. Okay, so this is, you know, we're only the start of a campaign, really. We're going nowhere. GPs were very clear on that again yesterday. You know, we are going to be a thorn in the side of CELTA until we get movement on this, until we get movement, particularly on our outpatients. And, you know, we will be back in our consultant colleagues as well, but we're going to focus on our own patch first, but we will be back in our consultant colleagues. We cannot, you know, I live in this county too. That is my hospital as well. And we cannot allow it to be downgraded in front of our eyes. And we do need the patients to back us up. And if you want to back us up, write letters, send them to the department, send them, you know, the minister's email address is online. So is your local TDs. So is your local minister. Write to them, get angry, tell them your experiences. Mm-hmm. And tell them that you're not going away either.
And also, to like, can I throw it on the laps of the opposition TDs as well, or the non-government TDs? You know, we appreciate one hearing of this, but this needs to be kept at the forefront of their agendas as well. Do you know what I mean? It's not saying, well, I raised this in mid-October when it's January the 1st. This, everyone who is paid handsomely to represent this county needs to do absolutely as much as they can to back GPs, consultants and the public to get these problems resolved. I'm not saying you're saying that, but I want to make sure that the responsibility is shared evenly here. I do understand that when you're in government, it's different, but go ahead, Parag.
Yeah, so a great example of that, Greg, is actually that when, you know, and I am apolitical, you know, and I hate playing politics with healthcare because that's not our vibe. But when the Sinn Féin spokesperson was up, and, you know, it was telling that he was able to come and the minister was not, but that's a separate issue. When he was up, he actually explained what happened in Waterford Hospital years ago. And it was a great example. And it actually gave us a lot of hope. So I hope it gives the same hope to your listeners today as well. They had lots of the same issues, same story in Waterford 10, 15 years ago. And what they did was the GPs, the consultants, and all of the elected representatives, opposition, government, local councillors, everybody got together and everybody had the same messaging. And everyone had the same agenda and everyone put politics aside and everybody worked together to get things done. And the way they did that was they constantly met with the minister, they constantly met with the HSE as a group of TDs. So I'm calling on our five TDs in the county to do the same thing, to work together, you know, with the minister, with the HSE, with local management, with CELTA and with the GPs and consultants and say, right, what are we going to do that we're not looking at the same issues in this hospital in the next 5 years that we've looked at in the last 5 years? We're not, you know, these are problems that can be fixed. And speaking to CELTA yesterday, you know, it was as if maybe these things aren't fixable. They are. They're fixable. They got fixed in Waterford and they could be fixed in Letterkenny too. And we're going to demand that they're fixed here too.
And as they are, the recruitment, the retention becomes less of an issue, we would hope as well, because it becomes more of an attractive place to work and to actually be able to use your skills to make people better. As always, thanks for so much of your time. Dr. Parag McGuinness, have a wonderful day, will you? We'll be back with more after a break. My GP advised me to email the hospital to complain about my experience in it. I did this over a week ago and I've had no response. I wonder, does anyone in the hospital actually deal with complaints? There is an email address for complaints, but is anything actually done about the complaints? Well spoken, Dr. Parag McGuinness, says another. And last one before the news, the ongoing issues at LUH has to be made an election issue. Hearing that doctor speak about the way we are treated by our politicians is making me very angry. The fact that Minister McConnell Logue's not even fighting our corner has copper fastened my resolve not to vote for him in the next election, though I'm sure he would say if he came on this programme that he's working on it, and he met with the minister and secured this, that and the other.